Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Candyman, a podcast that is not about the movie Candyman, where star Tony Todd had to stick a dental dam in his mouth so the bees couldn't fly down his throat when he and Virginia Madison had their infamous bee kiss. We're not going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about Sweet Tooth on Netflix. I'm Alex.
I mean, it's a good idea to have a bee dental dam in anytime you go outside of the home, because bee kisses happen. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on this episode, we're going to be talking about Sweet Tooth Season 2, Episode 6, how it started, how it's going. And later on in the podcast, we're going to be trying Nestle Crunch, which Pete has already referred to me as an old man's candy bar. So this should be a fun one.
This is like a candy bar that they were like back in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. They were like, let's do a movie about this.
I'm starving. It's like a Necco Let's get to the show already.
Starving. Again, this is not going to solve your hunger problem. I don't know what you think food
you're
is.
You're starving? What are you talking about?
I'm dying for a candy bar that I was promised hours ago.
You know what I'm starving for? Patience.
Wow.
Patience, Pete.
Well, nah, man.
Well, let's
so
get
we have,
into...
It starts off with the voiceover.
Oh, hold
the
on,
guy.
hold on. Yes, of course it starts off with a voiceover. Well, when you're watching a TV show... Sometimes a TV show watches you back.
I mean, honestly, that'd be a breath of fresh air with the narration.
In any case, forgetting about the narration for a moment, brought over for you here, we're finally really getting to it as the Error Buds take their attack on the Essex County Zoo directly to the... I'll keep calling them Air Buds. I'm fine with that. Anyway, Amy and the Air Buds are attacking them. Amy is on the ground. She's trying to get the animal kids out. Meanwhile, Gus and Jep are finally together. They team up, and Gus really stands up here and says, no, listen, we're not leaving without the rest of these animal kids. And ultimately, we end in a place where they do escape. Amy gives Jep the old nod, so they're good now.
Yeah, we're friends.
Oh, they're good.
And then we get a big, like, punch in the gut cliffhanger where Amy's pinky starts
popping.
Pinky. Just when you Pinky's think everything's okay. Stop it. Every
Awful.
Time.
We'll definitely talk about that.
Like, that's what's so creepy about the show. You think everything's okay. And all of a sudden I'm like, don't zoom in on her pinky. Camera, stop it. Stop it. Don't you zoom in on her pinky. And then it did. And I was like, no.
Sometimes you're begging the camera not to zoom in. And then it zooms into your heart.
That's really good. Pete, do you think maybe the pinky was just nervous that the camera was zooming in and was just shaking nervously?
Like, yeah, because it was like, oh my God, here's my big close-up.
My big shot.
Yeah.
Because a lot of different fingers have different skill sets, and the pinky is obviously the theater major of the hand.
Now, Justin, you work in production. What's the casting process like? As a line producer. When you're looking for a pinky. When you're trying to find the perfect pinky.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Prevailing logic says go with the fingers that are on the actor's hands. But I like to really cast on merit, like which pinky, which finger has done the work, which finger had the best audition. So sometimes you got a thumb playing a pinky, and then you got five index fingers filling out the rest of the hand. Because that's what acting is. It's taking on a role. It's bringing us a vibe.
Yeah, that's called passing. Okay, well, I'll get there somehow.
Wow. Tridigitational.
I don't know what just happened, but reboot yourself.
Yeah, why don't we reboot myself right back into the recap, because another huge thing that is going down here is Singh and Ronnie are very much a focus of this episode. We talked about how Ronnie was put under house arrest last episode. This episode, once again, she says, Gargoyle, straight up, let's get out of here. We got to flee. Johnny is now on their side. Johnny frees them. But Singh can't let go. He's got to go back for his research. He thinks he's finally cracked it this time. Of course, it's too late because Amy already burned his lab during all of the chaos, and he is left without his lab, without his research, and Ronnie, seemingly very happily, goes on the road and meets a fleet of horses. That's not what that's called, but...
Fleet?
Yeah.
That's a... It's a fleet of horses, like ships and horses.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, so that's what's going
an
on.
Armada. And it's an armada.
You went to Cornell, right? And you said a fleet of horses. That's awesome.
I've flock.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm very hungry. We need to get to this candy.
Thank you. Let's go.
Again, that's not going to satiate your brain hunger.
And we're very worried about Bear and what horses. Was going to happen with Tiger. Yeah. Tiger, her former rival in the animal army, was captured by the Blondie the last episode. This episode is all comes out.
Dude, that his frown name is, on it, Blondie it, was just, oh, my God.
His name is Surfs Up Blondie. First off, and
it's
I think
Break Blondie is what.
And
it
I
is.
Think I think this is a quote when he felt betrayed. I believe this is from the episode. I wanted to hang 10 with you, but this is a total wipeout. I thought I was a hardcore tube ripper, but I'm a total Barney.
Wow,
I believe that was his line.
I don't think so.
I like how you looked at your notes, but you.
Yeah, I wrote that down. I made that up and wrote it down.
In any case, the big thing that comes out of this though is that Bear and Tiger agree to work together again.
They're cool. They're on the same side. They're cool. They just gave each
other.
Everybody's
getting the nod this episode. Yeah. I guess. Yeah. That's the point of the title. We've been talking a lot about the titles of these episodes. This one, I was surprised to get a meme title here with how it started and how it's going. But there you go. We found out how it started, and now we see how it's going. So there you go.
Well, and that could reference the relationship, the Sing-Ronnie relationship, or it could be sort of showing this is the pivot point for the season. Up next is sort of what's the where we're headed. Where we're
finally
headed.
What I want to do is check in with Alex because how are you feeling? Now Bobby is just a button they throw on the end of the episode where it's like
they left Bobby behind.
Every episode, Bobby's like, oh, you know, just like, oh, it's Bobby. You know, like
I'm feeling pretty good about it. I mean, I'm a stupid idiot watching this show where Rufus is the mullet guy who fought with Jep a couple of episodes back. Yep. He is flying his plane. He's like, he's been promised a tank. So he's like, I'm going to get this tank. He dive bombs. Abbott shoots him down out of the air and he crash lands. And I was like, well, that's it. Rufus is dead. Fooled me once. And then Rufus shows up and he's totally fine.
How did he get out of that plane? How do you think he got out of that plane?
Probably think the idea was the parachute that was on top of Bobby, because then we see a parachute and there's some wrinkling there. Rufus looks back and I was like, whoa, what's under there? Which kid is under there? And then it's Bobby. And I was like, it's Bobby. Hooray.
Of course it's
Bobby. You're like a baby who doesn't understand object permanence.
Yeah, you're
and
like,
you get peekaboo'd.
Yeah, you're like, whoa, that was awesome.
You love Bobby.
I love Bobby so much. And I didn't like Rufus, but now I'm all on board the Rufus Bobby train. Yeah. Team Supreme.
That team's going to be awesome. Those two rolling around in a tank together? Come on.
That's
be a
the
fun
thing
time.
That I got so excited about, because that's 100% where we're heading, is Bobby with like a little helmet on.
Of course.
Right around the tank. We're going to get that shot, and I'm going to lose it.
It's going to be like that old
tattoo. You've never gotten a tattoo before, but you're going to get that right on your arm right now.
Oh, my God. Maybe I am.
That's one of the realest things I've ever heard you say. Wow. It's going to be like that old Dukakis campaign ad where Bobby's in the tank.
Hey, if you get these Bobby Shawshank bomb, I'll get that. I'll pay for that to get tattooed on your back. That would be unbelievable.
On my back? Yeah. Not on my shoulder? Not like a little...
Shawshank. The full Shawshank.
So every time I go swimming, which is never, people will see that?
Yep.
I think you answered your own question. I think what we have here is Rufus and Bobby are really the Mandalorian show that we need.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the Mando and Grogu that for this generation.
100% into it. I love it. That's great. I'm very excited to see it. Thank you for bringing it up, Pete. I appreciate it. Why don't we talk about the Ronnie and Sing of it all? Because that's a big emotional storyline over the course of this episode.
I can't.
Flashback to
the flashback
first.
Was so moving, and then they gave us hope, like, you know what, they're gonna make it work, and then Well, he chose the job over. I can't believe it.
The interesting thing about this is
realistically, all he had to do is be like, oh, okay, well, she should probably die soon anyway, and they can go back and get my work. Like, what are you really doing?
What? Wow.
That's a crazy wish for this character that you like, to be like, oh, I wish he was a full-on sociopath.
So we get the scene at the beginning, which is very sweet, where they go to a weird B&B. Like, they have these two characters at the B&B who I was like, are we going to see them again? There's clearly a lot going on with these two characters. Maybe they showed up at some point previously in the series, and I'm just not remembering them. Because
I don't know. I thought it was hard to say, but they definitely are a little weird. And they feel like they start a scene and then never... we never got what the point of it was. I mean, this whole thing, because I would say the same thing about the scene with Singh and Ronnie in the room, the Ganesh, very cool, reverential moment.
Nice. Yeah.
And then the bat in the room thing. And I was like, I was trying to connect that with what they're going through now. And I sort of struggled. Like, I don't know what, because it's not like he was like obsessed with the bat and sacrificed their time together at the inn.
No, it's just a cute slice of life moment for them. That's all it is. It's just this thing.
I would venture, just to throw it out there, and maybe I'm giving it too much credit, but I don't think I am. So Singh catches, there's this bat in this room, Roddy's freaking out. Mm-hmm. Singh takes the bat and brings it outside. Later on in the episode, Ronnie comes upon, or actually Amy comes upon his lab, though Ronnie sort of has a sense of this anyway, and Singh has... ripped apart every chicken in the lab, its entrails everywhere, in order to figure it out.
All right, take it easy.
Well, he has, though, and I think the idea here is exactly what this divide between Ronnie and Singh is he used to be gentle. He used to care about things. He cared about her. He cared about animals. He made sure they were safe, took the bat, and he understand it. And now that's gone. That sense of empathy, that understanding of animals, both through the hybrids and also literal animals with the chickens, is completely gone. So I think that's the parallel potentially that they are drawing.
That's interesting, showing how much he's changed.
Yeah, but I hate to – we don't see what he did with the bat. He could have just like bitten its head off and like smeared its blood over his face and then
kind of – it didn't have any blood after that, but you're right.
So
Alice Cooper thing? You think he's Ozzy Osbourne?
We didn't see. He grabbed it in the coat and then he left the room and then came back later with a huge smile on his face. He was like weirdly happy. We don't know what he did with the bat.
Weird conspiracy theory. Have you guys ever had a bat get in a room that you were in?
No, but Batman did.
Great point.
Yeah.
I guess I'm setting myself up to tell a story. I had...
here we go.
I've had bats come in the room, and it's not anywhere near that easy to get them out as the way they portrayed it in this television show. I've had to, like, swing a broom to knock the bat out of an open door. It's dicey.
Hmm. Wow. I was just looking up. I meant to do this before the podcast, but Ganesh is, according to Wikipedia.com, the god of new beginnings, wisdom, and luck. So that certainly makes a lot of sense for that first scene. Maybe leaving it for him at the end of the episode. That's certainly she's starting a new beginning, which is also her ending. But for him, maybe she's leaving it for him as a hope of like, please, you got to figure something out. This is your breaking point. You got to move on.
Well, I think you used to sort of mean something. You used to have things in your life that matter to you. And it seems like he's so obsessed with this that he's letting all the other things go. So maybe that was a reminder. But for new beginnings, I think at this point in the show, she's like, this is a sign to show that I'm out. I've started my new beginning.
It's just hard because it's like, it's not like he's just casually doing something. Like, he's trying to discover a cure and save people's lives. So it is important work. It's not like, oh man, this guy he works too much.
But he hasn't done it. I mean, I think I understand Ronnie's perspective. Well, he hasn't. I mean, I understand Ronnie's perspective a bit more because, like she says in the episode, it's been 9 years. And all I want for my last month alive is to be with you. That's it. And instead, he says, oh, no, wait, I'm going to do this one more thing. It's Gus's antler. Gus is the key. I got to track down Gus. And from her perspective, there have been 45, probably hundreds of different Gus's that are like, that's the key. That's the thing that's going to do it over all this time. So she is done. She's out of there. And she's saying to him, you know, you were saying it in a very callous way earlier, Pete, but she's like, give me this month. Like, be with me, be here with me. And I don't think it's right for Sig to be like, yeah, sure, whatever, buddy, I'll come with you and then watch you die, because that's not what he's going to do. He is scared to watch her die. He doesn't want to let her die. And he is completely obsessed with this cure for personal reasons at this point that have nothing to do with her.
It's funny you read it that way, because I don't read her wanting to leave as sort of like, you're not going to figure this out. You've had too many shots. I think it's more, why are we doing this? What is valuable about this world to save? It's all warlords that are maniacs. Like, why don't we just go make ourselves happy and let this thing go that doesn't really matter anymore? So that, and like, especially with the, when there was no victim associated with it, before she found out about the hybrid kids, I think she was like, okay, this is a good sort of pastime, or this is a good quest. But now that there's so much suffering attached to it, she's like, this is a waste of all of our time. Let's go enjoy ourselves for whatever time we have left. It's like a wider perspective.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that's why I, just from a logical perspective, forgive Amy's actions in terms of burning all the research, because I think she's the same way. She's like, these kids, these animal kids, those are my future. Those are the people that I want to raise. Those are the people I want to be with. It doesn't really matter about the cure, because there's so few parts of humanity left. Get rid of it, move it on, burn it down, go on to the next thing. It's like how she says to Wendy at one point in the episode, I didn't write down the exact line, but essentially that, like, home is what you make it. Like, a home is just a bunch of bricks. That's it. It's the people you're with. That ties into the Ronnie and Sing thing as well.
Well, and I think in that moment, Amy going in there, I love the comparison between, like, Sing goes in that room and sees potential and sees how close he is to, like, solving this great mystery. And she goes in the same room and sees none of that. She sees the inhumanity on display.
Exactly,
And I love that, because they're both right. And the reason that it's this is bad, that they both are making mistakes here, is they're both not seeing the other side. They're both too far on in their thinking to be like, I don't need to burn this down, because there's the cure here. And he's made horrible moral compromises to get where he got.
Well, and also, to take this one step further, an overall theme of the show is family, right? And that ties into what Johnny is doing as well, where he's doing the right thing, but he also isn't going to leave his brother, because he loves his brother, even though he's General Abbott.
Yeah,
he loves,
like, him and wants to be. My brother needs me.
Exactly.
Like, well, yes, but he needs you to, like, help him get better, because right now he's on the top of the roof with a rocket launcher, just like, you know, taking shots at planes and stuff. So,
well, but I think
they were remarkably successful at taking down the Air Buds.
They were, but also the Air Buds were like, our plan is to throw a barrel in a fridge and we're just gonna keep circling around until you shoot us. So,
well, and like, to drop, they dropped the flower power bomb,
right?
Yeah.
And that, what did that, just didn't attack, that didn't kill them, that doesn't do anything to them, right?
Well, no, they thought it was the flowers the poisonous flowers that would kill everybody. And then that's why he freaks out when he eats it and realizes it's plastic.
Yes. So, okay.
You
know,
did you watch the episode? He's like, get out of here. It's poison. You know, run for your lives. They scatter. And then he's like going back and he picks one up and eats it. And it's like, he's like, it's plastic. It was fake.
So the flowers, right, if I remember correctly, they're a side effect of the sick. People don't know exactly what they do, but there was the whole Wizard of Oz falling asleep in the field of poppy things that happened last season when Jap and Bear and Gus, and I don't think anybody else was there, but they wandered across and they fell asleep. So I don't know if they're necessarily deadly, but certainly people are scared of them because they are a side effect of the sick. So the Air Buds take this canister that is filled with gas and also what looks like the flowers. They drop it. It explodes everywhere. Flowers are everywhere. It's very beautiful, a gorgeous sight. But like Pete said, they realize they're just plastic flowers. They're not actual flowers.
It's just meant to freak them out. It's not an actual attack. But the purple flowers, I feel like they do a good job on the show of making us feel like them, where they're like, What are these keep showing up? But they haven't told us really anything about them.
Yeah. I think they're just, I mean, maybe they'll establish it at some point, but like they're a magical part of the world. Like at its base, this is a fairy tale. So that's what we're getting there. I do want to take a step back and ask you guys a question. And this is a little bit into speculation, but by the end of the episode, Gus and the animal kids and Jep and Amy, as we mentioned, are all on the bus. And Gus is like, we're going to Yellowstone. And I guess Jep and Amy.
Next stop Yellowstone.
Next stop Yellowstone, which I don't think Jep or Amy knew before this, but both of them were like, sounds good. Always wanted to visit there. Let's go. Based on the theme that we're talking about, this is Gus trying to go home again. So is that him moving backwards, do you feel like, or is it actually forward motion?
I think he's changed so much. And we see in this episode, like he and Jep are sort of like, Jep's like, I know what to do. And he's like, yo, I'm going to pick the lock. All right, chill out.
Yeah. And then he's like, yo, we can't leave without the kids. Chill out.
Yeah, Gus is sort of in the leadership role here, and Jep is sort of just trying to keep up with him, I feel like. So big change there. And I think, so to your question, Alex, I think it is going to be something different, but are we going to, we have two episodes left. I mean, this is further speculation, but like, that's not a ton of time to sort of reestablish it in a new place and then have Abbott strike back. Plus we have the tape from Bear and Mom here.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot to happen. Are they actually going to go to Yellowstone and reset there, or are they going to just be somewhere else and be stopped for a bit?
I don't know. I mean, I said this in the last episode that it felt like a penultimate episode. A lot of the stuff that went on here, other than the animal army not actually showing up, felt like a season finale type episode. So to have this on the road thing or whatever happens, I really have no idea what's going to happen in these last two episodes, which is an exciting place to be, beyond the fact that the season one finale shook things up in an enormous way and went so much harder than we expected. So I don't know. I'm excited to see what happens. We didn't really talk about the bear storyline too much.
We did. Remember I said the quote about being a tube ripper and a total Barney? I think covered it.
Oh, yeah. We're good to go.
Yeah, I think she gave a power nod to her friend, and they were cool again. And they were
though. That's all I wanted to say about it is like talking about going in surprising directions. We didn't expect Tiger to show up again. Tiger did show up again. We thought it was going to be revealed and everything go horribly wrong, and it doesn't because Bear and Tiger Tiger says, "I'm sorry." It's such a smart human move for the show to do that most shows would have some sort of knockdown, drag out fight, amp up the conflict, make it deadlier. And instead, having this kindness, put it down, Pete, this kindness that comes out through it, I thought was very nice. It was very sweet.
Was great. And then we got this great scene that sort of reminded us of all the stuff going on. Like, she tells Tiger, like, I have to get this tape. It's Gus's mom on here. She needs to – has a message for Gus. I was like, all right, that's good reminder. That means we're probably going to get that later. And then she was like, I just wish I could connect with my sister, Wendy. I was like, yes, right.
I totally forgot that.
Me too. And I was like, oh, God. Because that scene, I was like, why are they – they're just like sitting in this scene and talking so much. And I was like, oh, these two huge pieces of news to remind us of for the next two episodes. I was like, so we're going to get – the Bear Wendy reconnection.
So,
100% we're getting that. And then I think we're going to get Birdie is Gus's mom's name, right? I think she's going to show.
Yeah.
Wow.
A couple of other things I wanted to mention. We should probably talk about the scene where Workaholics soldier wakes up in a bunch of kibble.
Oh, yeah, wakes up in the kibble, yeah.
Ever happened to you, Pete? Asked specifically, seems like that's something that happened to you once.
Yeah, you've fallen asleep in kibble before.
I've woken up in the middle of an inflated pool, but not kibble.
Yeah, I like the way that shot was staged because we know that he got knocked out by the animal children, but it really, like the way he's sitting there, it looks like he ate too much kibble and fell asleep.
Yeah. Yeah. We've all eaten too much kibble and fallen asleep in kibble, right?
Where am I? Oh, geez, did I do this
last
night?
Not this again, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was very fun. We also didn't talk about the animal kid escape, which was very fun and cute, where Maya Monkey sets up a rope and gets all the kids out, and Earl Elephant's like, oh, I can pull everybody up. Yeah. And then he does. Yeah. And then in the middle of the big fight,
he does that dramatic like let go move and takes out the two dudes.
Drop. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Jep like really nailed the guard. That was really fun to watch. Like he
did this
up.
Weird jumping punch that was like, yeah. Oh, that would hurt so much for yeah. both of them.
Yeah. Jep this is also beat I'm up. Kind of glad to get away from the zoo just because I think this is the third episode in a row where Gus has run around the zoo while a bunch of soldiers chase him like a cartoon character.
Yeah. Yeah.
So still agreed. Fine. But
I will say on that tip, I loved that Abbott catches, he like stops and the bus slowly passes him and they just all like roast him as a
I was like, what are the odds of this? Moon him? Or what yeah. are they gonna, you know?
And it was played so slowly, like Abbott could like get him or something, but instead they're just confident of being like, later, idiot.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
What do you think about the hard-nosed female soldier who now seems to be Abbott's second in command, who's popped up in the last two episodes?
She weirdly came out of nowhere, but she had the right ideas mm-hmm. here, where she was like, let's just leave, dude. We have yeah. a whole utopian society.
Yeah, you remember that hard whole, to build. You know, monologue you gave us about this sweet place, Evergreen? Let's just go there, right?
Why do you even like this zoo? Yeah. Zoos are fucked up.
I'm very curious about where we are going to end up with Abbott at the end of the season, because they've added so many different layers and directions to him in terms of feeling for him, in terms of his connection to Johnny, in terms of this female soldier being the one to be like, hey man, let's just disengage and get over there to safety. There's Madame Zhang. There's the kids constantly beating him. So it feels like you get the rocket launcher moment where he's a badass and shooting down Rufus. Cool. And then you get these other moments where the kids are like, bye bye, where he's a doof.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just wonder where we are going to end up with this character.
Because also, like, sometimes he has his glasses on. Sometimes he takes them off. Like, there's a lot going on with that. Also, it was kind of weird, the back and forth where he shoots down the thing and then she's like, you did it. And he goes, yep, I sure did. And I was just like, wow, he's this dialogue confident. Is just like really
Let me ask you, Pete, the glasses thing seems to really stick in your craw. As a glasses-wearing human, do you feel like you never take yours off? And so yeah. him doing that is really unsettling to you?
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, I don't know who he is when they're off. You know what I mean? Like, who is this other dude? You know?
When you look in the mirror without your glasses on, are you like, who the fuck are you?
No, hey! I would have to get this close to the mirror. I can't do that. I don't, yeah. It's a blurry person in the mirror, some stranger I've never seen before.
I did really like Abbott's. Wow. I did really like Abbott's. Right, I think it's when he sits down on the stairs and he just goes, dang it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, is Yosemite Sam?
That was yeah. Well, funny. It's funny you just say Yosemite Sam because I was like, he does have like Wile E. Coyote energy. Yeah. Where he's like, yeah. I got to get this Roadrunner. Oh, I missed it. Whoops.
Before we finish off here, before we move on to the next section, I just want to ask about the Amy thing at the end. Where do you think they're heading with it? Is she going to start sacrificing the animal children one by one to make the cure for herself, to keep herself going?
Yeah, she'll just jam a straw into the top of their head and suck them dry. Like a pina colada sitting poolside.
I feel like they're going to get to Yellowstone and she's going to die and then Bear is going to return and kind of be like the mom figure for these kids, right?
Wow.
I think that's a good call, and she could slot right into that. I mean, I do hope they approach the question of, like, Amy destroyed all that. I think I want to get Sing over there with them as well, like if he's trying to track down Gus to keep his research going. That's why I feel like we might get a time dash coming into the next episode. We'll make it a little bit of it, and maybe they'll be in Yellowstone.
Or maybe Ronnie took the one cure that they had made, and she's going to show up and give Amy a little more time where she doesn't have a little more time.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I want the moral thing of, like, Amy, just take this, and her being like, no, I refuse, or what the – there's just a great scene there. That's a great, like, thing to have happen for them to grapple with.
Well, thank you for sharing us what you want to do. I want to eat this fucking candy bar already.
Wait, I do have one more question for you, though, Pete, before we move over to the candy bar. So they're heading back to Yellowstone. Do you think there's going to be a bear kid there in a shout-out to Jellystone? Pete? What do you think, Pete?
Oh, sorry. That's a specific Pete question.
Yeah. What? Justin, don't answer this.
Yes. No, this is not.
I'm opening Pete? It. I'm opening this candy.
All right. Fine. Let's move on.
Wait, no. I actually have one other thing. Like, And it's very apropos to what we're doing right now. When Amy gets on the walkie at the top of the episode, she says, "I'll make this quick." And I'm like, why are you in such a rush? Are you waiting to get a Nestle Crunch right after you finish this call with Abbott?
Probably.
But like, I feel like that's such a cliche
thing.
Maybe her
friends have been torturing her for hours
she
about
also
it.
Makes she, a joke to Abbott about, she also makes a joke to Abbott about never him probably never satisfying a woman, which I was like, oh, this is a kid's show most of the time.
Yeah, I know, they get that. But I just, that's such a funny cliche in shows like
Pete,
this. Like,
come
I'll
on.
Make this good. I know, you're the worst, Pete.
All right. Well, I guess we've moved on to the Nestle Crunch portion.
I can hear you crunching.
Yes.
You can't eat this in secret.
I'll just mention about Nestle Crunch, and I don't remember whether I said this at the beginning of the podcast. I don't think I've ever had a full-size Nestle Crunch bar. The only time I've ever had it is like Halloween when you get a tiny little mini-sized Nestle Crunch.
That's funny because I've only ever had giant, like, you know, those big checks.
Oh, the novelty they give ones, yeah.
Yeah, I get that's how big my candy bar goes.
Yeah. Where do you get that? Hershey's World?
Yeah, you have to win. I keep winning this Hershey's contest.
Man, I forgot how good these were, man.
Yeah, I mean, I generally like a Crunch bar. I think they're my mom's favorite candy bar.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Ooh, these, even like, so the pieces that you break it up in are larger than a mini even.
Interesting. Yeah, they're larger than your Hershey chunk. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is pure, it's just all about the texture. The crunch, there's no additional flavor. It's just chocolate that pops in your mouth.
Yeah.
Dude, what are you talking about? There's Rice Krispies in here, man. There's flavor.
You tasting the rice, man?
How's yeah, what's rice the rice taste?
Yeah. You getting that rice flavor? Pete?
Rice Krispies, man. They're delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Do you eat your Rice Krispies plain?
No, but if you put chocolate milk in your Rice Krispies, it tastes pretty good.
Nice.
It's pretty good.
I would argue that you can't taste the rice if you are adding chocolate milk to it.
No, that's good. I like the texture. I feel like when you have like
it
just a
nice.
Yeah, when you have a Hershey's bar, I don't know. I mean, there's something nice about it just melting on your tongue, I guess, but it sort of feels insubstantial sometimes. So getting the Rice Crunch in there, I like it. It's good.
How do you crisp a rice? Yeah.
Is it like popping corn?
I mean, looking at it, they don't look, they look like they are inflated like popcorn.
I don't know. I don't know how you do it. We really should have looked that up. Yeah, this is good. I don't know that I would need an entire bar. This is too much chocolate for me. I think the...
Really?
I'm going to stick with the mini ones. That feels like the perfect
whole thing,
amount.
Man.
I'm not going to eat the whole thing. I'm not going to... Oh my God, did you already finish that?
Nope.
You really do have a problem, Pete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really the message of this podcast.
What do you think about this one, Justin? Because you're not a candy fan.
I like it. I mean, this is just like a good, like I said, a good chocolate bar with a little bit of zang to it. But if I'm eating something where I want this texture, I would go ahead and have it be a Mr. Good Bar.
Mm.
What?
Because then it has the added
peanuts
flavor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you do get the peanuts of that. I know it was pretty derisive to the peanut M&Ms in the last episode. I will throw out, this feels like a budget version of really good United Kingdom candy. Like,
wow.
In the United Kingdom, chocolate's better. They
Are
have
you
more
talking
variety.
About Disney
I'm
World?
Talking about like an Aero or something like that. Just the chocolate. I don't know. The Nestle chocolate is fine to me. But I feel like with a better chocolate and like a little more crisp, or I don't know if you guys have ever had, oh my God, what I'm blanking what it's called. The crunchy, a crunchy bar. Have you ever had that? Not a Nestle crunch.
The square ones. They're like a square.
No. So it's basically, it's chocolate covered honeycomb. It's so good. It is. And it's
well,
not like,
talk, why don't we eat in that then?
Should we do it next episode? I'll do a crunchy bar.
No, let's do like a thousand grand or Rolos or something. You know what I mean?
Pete, you're a fiend.
Take five.
I could hear you fiending for the next episode.
Yeah. You need to get off here, watch the next episode of Sweet Tooth, then just buy every candy. Just
I got to say, though, like this was a lot. It was more delicious than I was expecting. The kind of Rice Krispies make it a airier, kind of more chewable, enjoyable candy.
Mm-hmm. I wish they'd take that extra air, which is wasted space, and just put some Rolos in there or something.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean?
Wait, jam Pete, some more. I do have an important question, though. Are you full now, Pete?
No.
Oh, you're still – really? You're still hungry after that chocolate bar. So weird.
Let me ask you, Pete, based on your face, are you happier? Because I would also say no.
Oh, really?
Are you happier?
I've been dying to eat this candy like all day, so yes, I am happy.
Did you all day? Did you savor it?
No, I always forget to do that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Man. All right. Well, pleasantly surprised from Pete, so yeah. That's good. So
that's
maybe...
great. And I've sort of like this is. I was happy with it. I'm happy with the crunch.
How many did you eat? How many squares?
Two, and that'll be enough.
Yeah. Same here. That was actually what I always do. I was good with one. But.
I'm going to take this and make a little movie of throwing it away and send it to you, Pete.
Please do.
Well, that'll make you happy. Yeah. You can savor that.
We're getting pretty close, though, to determine the syrup cup for season two, what the best candy of the season is, as well as heading very rapidly towards the end of the season of Sweet Tooth. If you'd like to support our podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Sweet Tooth. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, the Candyman can.
Do you think it's funny that Jep had his slingshot the whole time in his pocket? That must have been hard to carry around.
Poking into him.
Man, poking his butt.